In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, my friend, and how are you? It is such a pleasure to be back with you. I hope you are feeling well. This is Catch Up with Louise McSharry. The point of this podcast is to catch you up on the week, and it happens in three sections. First section is a news catch up. So if you haven't been paying attention, no worries. We will get you up to date so that you can join in any newsy conversations with your pals. And then the second section is a little interview with someone who's doing something interesting at the moment. This week it is Scotty, artist and brilliant fella all round. And then in the third section, you'll hear us chat popular culture. Yes, that's right. What have the celebs been up to? We've got a lot to talk about this week. Lots of fun stuff, actually. And because fortunately, Esther Moore Donoghue is our pop culture contributor this week, and she is a long-term Housewives stan, we were able to really get into what happened on The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City as well. So there is loads of fun stuff in this episode. If you're new, welcome. Thank you so much for trying the podcast. I really hope you like it. If you're coming back, hello, my friend. It is just so nice to be with you once again. Hope you all had a nice break. I'm just wrecked, lads. I'm wrecked. I was like, what? Oh, this is a lot, isn't it? I think it's especially a lot if you have small children. And then also, I know that lots of people struggle with Christmas just for family reasons or whatever. So if it wasn't fun, don't worry about it. It's over now. If it was fun, lucky you. And I'm sorry. I hope the transition back to normal life is okay. I am really excited just to get stuck back into work and get things going, get a bit of a routine going again. I kind of miss that. I have come up with all kinds of ideas of how I'm going to be more efficient this year. How long will they last? Who knows? Who knows? But I'm scheduling in a call with my doctor about my ADHD to try some medication again because I need some help. And I'm also trying to set up some structures and routines within my life to help me feel a little bit more on top of things. So look, we can all improve, and that's what your girl is trying to do. Now though, if you could do me one favor, if you like this podcast, I would so appreciate it if you could rate it and review it. I haven't asked you to do that for a while. I always forget. I'm absolutely terrible at this stuff, but it would really mean a lot to me and it really helps the podcast. You can do that on Apple Podcasts. You can do it on Spotify. I actually don't know how you do it on Spotify. I think I've given things stars before, but I don't think I've done much more than that. I'll do some investigating because really I should have known the details before I asked you to do that. But if you can figure it out, that would be much, much appreciated. And of course, do please send me your thoughts, your feedback, your ideas. If there's anything you'd like to hear me talk about, if there's anything you think that we should have covered that we didn't cover, if there's something that you particularly loved, if something that you heard on the podcast sprouted a thought, send me a voice note or a text, 089-209-6423. That's 089-209-6423. And then I do a mailbag episode every month on the Patreon where I respond to all of those. If you want to join in, patreon.com/catchupwithlouisemcsharry. It's another great way to support the podcast. I did get some messages from people who were trying to join up over the course of the last month. I had the Patreon paused for the month of December because I wasn't able to produce the extra episodes and I didn't want to charge people for episodes that they weren't getting. And what I did not know is that that meant that I couldn't also take on new Patreons, which is not ideal for me, but hey ho. we live and we learn. It is back up and running now. So if you've been trying to join and you haven't been able to, you should be able to now. So now, sorry about all of that. That's a lot of admin up at the front of the podcast. Let's get stuck in. Let's find out what's been going on in the news with thejournal.ie's Carl Kinsella. Carl Kinsella, is your break? Are you still on a break?
I'm still pretty much on a break. Yeah, I'm kind of back to doing a few shifts for the journal.
Okay.
But still on a break from college at least. So.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's still kind of a break.
Yeah, definitely.
I have found the re-entry into real life to be gradual because they helpfully scheduled the school holidays this year. So that for the full first week back at work, children are still off school.
Oh, is that good? Is that bad? I like, as a non-parent, I don't really know, you know, whether these things are, you know, preferable or if they're difficult.
It's pretty bad, I'd say. Tough, yeah. Pretty bad, because it means that Sam is in the sitting room now on an iPad and I'm in here doing my work and I have to feel guilty about it now.
I get you.
Yeah. Yeah. And unfortunately, my child is old enough to like actually entertain himself. But back in the days, it wasn't always like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But look, we move. It's grand. Isn't it nice for them to have the break? Did you enjoy the break?
Yeah, it was just kind of hectic. I feel like I actually ended up having a lot more social plans than I intended. I feel like usually I'm someone who I have quite a low threshold. I have like a low social battery, you know, like I'll do one thing and that'll kind of tide me over for a week. Mm. Whereas this time I did a lot of stuff. I will say I met a lot of people who were very complimentary about the podcast. So that's good news.
Oh, well, that is good news, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's good to hear.
We're really feeling it. And they were like, I mean, they were long term fans as well. But like they were, you know, they were happy for me that I'm part of it, which was cute.
Oh, that's so lovely.
Yeah,
I'm very touched. OK, well, I suppose let's give the people what they want and get into the news. We unfortunately are still starting with the conflict between Israel and Palestine. That actually feels like a misnomer. We are still starting with Israel's continued assault on Palestine. What is the latest?
Yeah, I think what's almost most interesting right now is that it has kind of gone beyond just Israel and Palestine. This week, I think the most significant development, or at least sort of the most significant military development, you would say, is that there was a drone strike that killed a Hamas leader, but he was based in Beirut, which is in Lebanon. So obviously Israel has already had tensions with, you know, Lebanon, Syria, some of the surrounding Middle Eastern countries. But I think this is being perceived as like a pretty significant escalation. It's also, you know, as someone pointed out, it really gives the lie to Israel's operations in Palestine, because they were able to kill this Hamas leader very effectively, very directly, you know, which begs the question, why have 25,000 civilians had to die in the supposed pursuit of Hamas leaders in, you know, Khan Yunis and in northern Gaza? So I think it's, you know, been another week in which Israel's reputation internationally has suffered, you know, significantly as a result of their actions. And I do get the feeling that even the more kind of moderate voices, or like people who would have been very blasé about Israel and their campaign up till now, are starting to turn. It really does feel like a turning point.
I just feel so discouraged about it all. It's like hard to feel like there's a turning point. And also, yeah. I think you said a few weeks ago on this podcast, like, even if there's a turning point now, so much has been lost that you kind of are like, not what's the point? Because obviously the point is that the people of Palestine get to have their country. But it is just heartbreaking to think that it's even gotten to this point in the first place.
That's it. There's no real way, I think, to talk about it or think about it that doesn't leave you like completely despondent.
Mm.
I suppose the most significant non-military development this week is that South Africa has taken a case against Israel before the International Court of Justice, which is, you know, it's an interesting development. It's hard to see, you know, how that could actually result in anything concrete. Like there have been.
Yeah.
Concrete...
For people who don't kind of understand what that means, maybe just explain a little
bit. Yeah. So essentially, you know, the International Court of Justice is a route by which countries can address these things. And there have been successful prosecutions. There's been prosecutions of like leaders of the former Yugoslav Republic, like I can't remember their names, but you know,
that's okay.
Like they have faced justice there, and it can obviously work, but it involves a total, unification of the international community in terms of bringing people to justice. And, you know, this is a case. It's been taken by South Africa. It's been supported by Turkey. Otherwise, there's very little support for it. And of course, without the support of, say, somewhere like the United States, you're not going to have a situation where Benjamin Netanyahu is sitting in a dock facing charges, you know.
And this is the continued issue, isn't it, though, that every time anything like this is instigated by a country at the UN or even the EU, you know, in the UN, it's just consistently vetoed by America, and the vote is usually abstained when it comes to the UK. So, like, when you have a country that's as powerful as America continuing to stop any kind of attempt at intervention by the international community, you're kind of screwed, aren't you?
Yeah, it really leaves you just with so few options. And I saw a report this morning, Anthony Blinken, the Secretary of State in the US, he's heading back to the Middle East, you know, in order to supposedly talk them out of escalation in Lebanon and other kind of surrounding Middle Eastern countries. And it reads as so ludicrous, because you're like, you are the ones giving financial and military cover to all of this. If you don't want an escalation in Lebanon, you can pull the plug right now. Yeah. So it just, it is frustrating to watch. And yeah, it doesn't inspire much hope.
No, and just to say that the people who are in Gaza are still suffering immensely. You know, hospital situations are basically down to almost nothing at this stage. Food is still not getting in. I think that's another part of the frustration, is that people around the world are donating in their droves, but the aid is not actually getting into the people that need it. So you've got trucks and trucks and trucks and trucks and trucks full of supplies and food and all the rest, and it never getting into Gaza or into the people who are you know, starving.
Yeah, and that's, I think it was 50% of people in Gaza are starving right now. And it is just, it's a huge sense of powerlessness, I think, for people, say, in Ireland, just watching it unfold. Because I think it's undeniable that there's broad popular support in Ireland for, you know, not only ending the conflict, but also just a free Palestine.
Yeah.
But I think people just feel like, what can they do? And I suppose for the time being, what people can continue to do is just continue to talk about it. Like, this is kind of what I've seen from, there was an interview in The Guardian with a Palestinian writer, and she was making the point that, you know, as sad as it might be, keeping the narrative alive on Instagram is actually important. You know, and I think it feels so cheap and it feels like you could do so much more, but in actual fact, this sort of, because Israel operates so heavily in the PR space and in the soft power space, that actually combating it on social media is quite a significant pushback against what Israel is going for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, also, you can protest. The next big protest in Ireland is on Saturday, the 13th of January, at the Garden of Remembrance at 1 o'clock. Usually people kind of start gathering from about 1 o'clock. I find it usually takes off kind of closer to 2 o'clock. You can boycott. There are lists of brands you can boycott who are seen to be kind of supportive of Israel. You can continue, as Carl said, to talk about it. I think the most important thing is that we all just keep going, because that's what they're asking us to do, even though it feels futile at times. Okay, let's move on. There was an earthquake in Japan.
Yeah, there was a couple of separate and I think unrelated disasters in Japan, but we'll start with the earthquake. So there was one very severe earthquake. It was one of a series of about 400 earthquakes on the main island of Honshu. So that's where Tokyo is. Mm-hmm. There was a 7.5 magnitude on the Richter scale. This was on New Year's Day. And the awful thing about Japan, or the kind of unfortunate thing about Japan, is that because it's just a bunch of islands, is that when you have these severe earthquakes, which they are really susceptible to, you also get massive tsunamis.
Yeah.
So you get huge damage done. So, I mean, they've had much worse earthquakes. This earthquake, I think the death toll most recently is sadly at 73 people, which is terrible. It's expected to rise. A lot of people displaced, a lot of people injured. And yeah, that's... And so... After that, there was also a plane crash at a Japanese airport where a commercial liner crashed with a Coast Guard plane. I think everybody on board the Coast Guard plane was killed. So, a very strange, a strange and sad couple of days for Japan.
Yeah. It was kind of wild to watch, because obviously we, you know, can see these things play out on social media now. It was wild to watch people in Japan post videos of them getting the tsunami alerts through their phones and stuff and experiencing the earthquake. It is a very confronting way to see natural disasters now that we've access to people's lives all around the world.
Yeah, and particularly, I think it's easiest to do with Japan because they have such an efficient warning system. Like, they're never kind of left in the lurch. They always do get the warning. But it is like you say, very confronting. And I have noted that in the reporting on this, they've said that the earthquakes and the tsunamis in the last 5 years have intensified quite a lot, which I suppose could be to do, like, you know, waves are going to be higher if there's rising sea levels. I'm sure there's a climate change component to the acceleration of these disasters. So yeah, I think, as you say, it's quite disturbing to be watching from afar while this while this happens, and you know, ultimately continues to happen. So you know, of course, a couple of years ago we had the absolutely nightmare tsunami that hit the Fukushima nuclear plant. I think about 18,000 people were killed in that occasion. So it is tough. You know, you'd feel at pretty great risk if you were living, you know, in Honshu, Japan.
Yeah, totally. On to a bit of good news. The Statutory Agency for Domestic Violence has started. This is a project by Justice Minister Helen McEntee.
Yeah, so this is a statutory agency. So I suppose, you know, if that sounds like a bit nebulous, that's something like TUSLA, you know, an equivalent of TUSLA almost. But it's for domestic, sexual and gender-based violence. So this was kind of part of an act that came into effect at the start of the year. And so this department is called CUAN, C-U-A-N, which is the Irish word for a safe haven or a place of shelter. And the main function of this body will be to sort of make sure that anyone suffering for domestic or gender-based violence has access to the sort of the relevant helpful agencies, service providers and such. So it's, you know, it's one of those things, as you say, it's good news. And it's also like it's Ireland making a step in the right direction in terms of addressing gender-based violence. It still leaves, you know, you a little bit cold because, you know, I saw a quote from a guard saying that, like, reporting has gone up of gender-based violence. And that's good. More people are reporting it. So more people are getting solutions. But it is kind of awful that it persists. You know, you just kind of, it would be nice if there was some, if you got the sense that there was some preventative measures in place, you know, better kind of education for, you know, certainly for young men. So, but this is obviously good news, but I know this is just always what occurs to me when I see stories like this is that, you know, you'd like some focus on prevention as well as response, you know.
When you were in school, did you get any education on consent or relationship dynamics or anything like that?
We briefly had SPAG, which I think they still have, but it was pretty much, it was very empty. Like, there was no critical engagement with any of those things. I think you learn a basic bit about how sex works, and that's kind of it. There's certainly nothing about consent, nothing about, and I suppose, like, when I was in school, this was kind of, it was honestly, even that was before consent became a hot button sort of topic. But yeah, certainly I received no education in that vein.
Yeah, and look, I know that there's improvements being made in terms of the SPHE curriculum and stuff like that. So fingers crossed, I guess, that will have some sort of impact. But I think you're right. I mean, look, it's great. It's good to know that the government have implemented something that looks at the specific needs of people who experience domestic, sexual, gender-based violence in Ireland. It's late, in my opinion, but it is good that it's happened. But it would be nice to see more kind of thinking in terms of where this stuff comes from. I agree. Now, we have got two fun stories to talk about toward the end of this slot, which I'm absolutely delighted about. And we're going to start with the darts.
The darts, baby.
Could I have predicted that I would be suggesting we talk about the darts on this show? Absolutely not. I would never have thought that this would happen. And yet, here we are.
I would have thought you would have been a huge darts fan. Everything about you screams darts.
Well, I do like the crack. And there is a lot of crack at the darts, you know?
Certainly, having watched it this past week, I would love to go. Like, I would love to go to Ali Pali and just experience, because the atmosphere just looks off the walls.
Yeah, I have a friend who's a big darts guy, and he's not, you wouldn't expect him to be a big darts guy. Like, he's a gay guy who loves, like, Tori Amos and Dua Lipa, and he loves the darts. And it's always been funny to me that he loved the darts, and he's gone, like, a few times, and he just is like, it's just the best fun. And I can see, having watched it, how you could get into it. But let's talk about, because there'll be lots of people who probably don't know why we're talking about the darts and are as surprised as I was to see or hear that it's on the show. But it's all because of one young, I mean, are we calling him a man? Luke Littler.
Yeah, that's he's a kid, you know. And so just to give the full overview, like the PDC World Darts Championship always takes place in like the last couple of years or the last couple of weeks of the year. It always ends around New Year's Day. But so it's, you know, it's a huge Christmas activity for people. People get really into it over Christmas. I always get into it over Christmas, even though I'm not a darts person. But this year was particularly phenomenal because this kid, this 16-year-old child, Luke Littler, made it all the way to the final. He was totally unseeded before it started. So like he wasn't by any means a favorite. He wasn't a phenomenon. People didn't know at all that he was going to be going on this crazy run. But he was just like on a tear. He just destroyed everyone. He walked out to Green Light by Pitbull. That was his opening music, which is nice. He's already done like photo shoot. Like there was such a good photo of him shared on Twitter by his mother on Christmas morning, like sitting cross-legged beneath the tree opening his presents, because he is literally a kid.
Now it has to be said though, he doesn't look like a kid. Like I first learned of him when my friend or actually I think it was Gordon sent a photo into a group chat and was like, how old would you say this person is? And like none of us would have guessed he was 16. So excuse me, the innocence of that photo was almost more adorable because he doesn't look like a kid, but he is a kid.
And that's and he's like, he just looks like the embodiment of darts, you know. You look at him and he's the most darts looking kid, and it is just amazing. And it was another cool detail. So last night he was in the final of the World Darts Championship. Unfortunately he lost. Luke Humphreys came out on top. But I think a cool thing about this is that because they had a 16-year-old in the final, the darts championship was sponsored by Paddy Power, because the final featured a child so heavily, Paddy Power had to scale back their advertisement.
Oh, that is interesting.
Isn't it? Yeah. So like, because they can't have, legally, they can't have like a 16-year-old as sort of a mascot or a brand ambassador. They've had to like scale it back, and they would have to scale it back even further had he won. But it is really interesting, and they'll have to keep that scaled back until he turns 18. At which point presumably they will descend on him in a big way, but you know, it's just an interesting, it's another, because people talk so much these days about the prevalence of gambling advertising in sports, it's interesting to see kind of anything that can make that shift.
I think darts is, I did get into it. I watched two full matches, which is more than I've ever watched in my life. I watched the semifinal and the final, and it is like you can understand it pretty quickly, although I don't know how they do the maths to figure out what they should be going for. Like I would not, I guess that's just practice, but I could never, so big respect to their minds. But you can pretty quickly get into it.
I think they can see. I think that, because I've played games of darts before where there's an electronic counter that shows you right away what you need. So I don't think they have to do the maths in their head. I think
you mean what they need, like in terms of which bits of the board they need to hit.
Yeah. So like you start off on 501, you have to get down to zero. And like, so say you've got like 80 left and you hit a double 20, then you'd have 40 left and it would tell you that you need, you know, you'd have a little electronic counter that'll tell you that you need another double 20, that kind of
thing. Like what comes up kind of beside the score as you get toward the end of the game if you're watching it on TV.
Yeah, that's so I'm just assuming they have, you can't see that on TV. I'm assuming they have that simply because even in some pubs I've played where they have that.
Yeah.
So, and I do just think there's no way anyone could do the mental arithmetic that fast.
I mean, some people could.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed reading about Luke's preparation for his matches. When he was asked about his preparation for the final, he said, "I'll be doing what I've been doing. In the morning, I'll go for my ham and cheese omelet and then come here, have a pizza and then prep on the board. That's what I've done every day."
That's good. Just that's advice for life. I think any of us could learn a lot from
an omelet, a pizza, what could go wrong? I love it. Okay, and then finally, Ryan Tuberty had his first show on Virgin Radio in London this week.
Yes, I listened to every minute of it.
You did, and you wrote about it for the Journal, and I really enjoyed it. So tell us, what was it like?
Yeah, it was a hard listen, to be honest.
And
so the format is very different. Like, and this was something that some friends had already told me, UK radio is quite different to Irish radio. It's a lot more music based. You have way less time to really get into any kind of discussion topics.
Okay.
And that really came across. It was like mostly him reading well-wisher texts and playing songs. And it was kind of funny because it was like, we're not really getting any sense of anything because he wasn't talking about anything. He was just reading texts that were wishing him well. So it was like a 3-hour thing of him being wished well by like mostly textures from Ireland. But it's weird. You could already get the sense that like, it's going to be hard for him because it's being simulcast in the UK and Ireland. He has to appeal to both audiences at once. And it kind of left him in a weird position where he was just like, he would be talking about the Phoenix Park and then he would have to, he'd realize he'd have to explain that to people. And he was like, oh, it's like the Irish equivalent of Hyde Park, which I mean, is kind of off as a comparison, to be honest. So like, I think it's going to be tough. He also like had a whole, like a really long conversation with Russell Crowe over the phone. That was really weird. He like, Russell Crowe was in the middle of hosting a dinner party, but apparently Russell Crowe is friends with Tuberty. So
yeah, because he tweeted like when Virgin Radio signed him, he was like, yeah, go Ryan or whatever, something along those lines. His support anyway.
Mates. Yeah. And yeah, he jumped on too. And I, you know, I think we can all kind of figure out why that is. Like, I think if you're Tuberty and you're on a new audience with all these English people, it you adds a lot name. To your, it adds to your credentials. If you can be like, look, I'm mates with Russell Crowe. But it certainly, I don't know. It was, I mean, and like, let's be honest. Okay. I was never a fan. I was never a huge fan. You know, I've never been in awe of Ryan Tuberty. So like, maybe I'm not the best person to ask in terms of if I have a preconceived bias to against him or whatever, but no, I definitely, it just wasn't that good, you know, let's be honest.
Well, I think, you know, I think the important thing to remember is, first of all, the first show of any run of any show is always tricky and there are lots of nerves, and a radio show, I can say from experience, takes a while to bed in, and like, you know, he'll need to find his identity within this new show, within this new community, within the new station. It's going to be tricky for him, I think, but no matter what, no matter how good he was, that would take time. And I think the point that you made about the format is really interesting. Yeah, like Monday to Friday, 10 to 1 p.m that's a music show, and there'll be bits of chat in there, but it is very different to what he's done, and it is more kind of traditional radio presenting than like broadcasting per se, which is what we're used to from him. So yeah, a challenge for him for sure, but I wish him well.
I wish him well too. I do wish him well. I wish, he's a nice guy. I've met him a bunch of times. He's always been really nice.
He is. But you know, I will never forget the day that I heard him say, introduce people to the expression humble brag and say it was the new cool thing in the world, and it was like about 6 years old. So he does have the ability to kind of put his foot in it, and he does have the ability to pull out a few clangers. And I think as well, like, you know, Ryan obviously had a relationship with Irish listeners that was based on lots of people kind of watching him grow up through RTE. He was there since he was young, and people who understood him and knew him really well. The audience is going to be very different. I'd be interested to know even the demographic of the Virgin Radio audience versus the demographic of the RT Radio 1. I'd say it's quite different.
Me too. And also just like how they respond to, he had like the little bits where he did, you know, kind of leaned into his old personality, and he talked about how much he loves books and called himself a political anorak and was talking about being a bookworm. And I do wonder, like, how does the sort of average London taxi cab driver respond to that kind of thing? Like, are you just sort of like, who is this man? You know, why is he talking about books on the radio in between, like, you know, songs by U2 and Dua Lipa? Yeah, but I mean, we'll see. Maybe he'll make a success of it. Who knows?
Yeah, and hopefully. Okay, Carl Kinsler, I know that people can read your column Cerulean the Years on the journal.ie. You're doing lots of other bits and pieces for the journal.ie at the moment as well. As I say, I really enjoyed your piece about Tuberty's first show. And where can they find you on the internet?
Yeah, on Twitter, you can get me at TV's Carl Kinsler, and on Instagram, you get me at carl.kinsler.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Thank you very much, Carl.
Thanks, Louise. That was good, I thought.
Yeah, it was fun. I hope you have a good week, and I will talk to you next week. Bye. Scotty is a self-taught, multi-award-winning artist and performer who has received critical acclaim and my personal acclaim for his work in theatre, audio, and fine art. Personally, I have connected really deeply with his work around fatness, class, and Irish identity. He's the son of Irish immigrants to England, and you may have heard him previously on the podcast talking about his brilliant podcast, After the Tone. Today, he's with us to discuss his new podcast project, which is called Self Help, and features Scotty ruminating on madness, sanity, self-care, self-pity, and more. As he says, it's here to help you escape the cult of new year, new me. And personally, I always love a little escape from that. It is always, always, always a pleasure to chat to Scotty, and this conversation was no exception. I really hope you enjoy. How are you doing?
Big question to start the new year with, please, Louise McSherry. Fine enough, I think. I mean, great. I'm not going to lie. I'm having a bit of a lovely time. It's a bit stressful because there's a lot on, and what a great thing to feel slightly overwhelmed by. But I don't do Christmas, and I haven't done Christmas for 6 years. And every year I reap the rewards of that.
So tell me more about that.
So I come from a culty family in Donegal, and very Catholic, very traditional, that when you have like a big passing in the family, that the first Christmas afterwards, you don't celebrate. And my grandfather passed away 6 years ago. And so I just took the tradition where it's like, okay, we're just not going to do anything this year. It's going to be low key. Will just go away. And it really opened up my eyes to the amount of stress and pressure and money. And like, look, I'm no longer a Catholic. I don't celebrate other Christian holidays. And so it sort of started to feel a bit like, well, why do we do this? Why can't we just take the moment to stop and rest rather than get ourselves really caught up in this idea that everything must cost something. And I think it's very different if you have kids or a young family, and that joy and that excitement that they experience is definitely something that I'm saying not to do. But when you're a bunch of adults living in a house with each other and your very privileged experience of like not needing anything, of course wanting things, but needing things is a very different question to ask yourself. It just feels like a really lovely time to sit and watch other people panic.
You know, I have to say, post-Christmas, I fully appreciate that. Even with the small children. Like, you do sometimes, I think, find yourself looking around going, like, what is the point? Like, I was so looking forward to, in the full lead-up, not to be a negative Nancy, but I was like, I'm just really looking forward to a break. And, like, it's not a break for me, you know? And it's not a break for a lot of people, I think. I think for a lot of people, it's really stressful. You put yourself in family situations that you wouldn't put yourself in otherwise. You have to tolerate people that you wouldn't tolerate in other areas of your life necessarily. And I have to say, that's not actually my experience of Christmas this year. But for me, it's just go, 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 go. And, you know, look, it's nice to have a break from work because I experienced that kind of overwhelm that you were talking about at the start as well. But like, it's still just manic. And I have watched with envy you going off on your travels over the last number of years and always thought it seemed like such a lovely thing to do, to take advantage of the quiet time and do something that you really want to do.
Yeah, I think so much of that period of time can feel like convention. And you're so right in terms of lots of people can have really difficult experiences with their families, and being in contact with them, being judged by them, being policed by them can do a lot of damage to people. So I think if convention is the only thing holding us there, if you have beliefs that are making you want to celebrate that period of time, good on you, have a great time. But if it's just convention, if it's just like this is the done thing, then it's a hell of a lot cheaper and a lot better on the soul to maybe divorce yourself from it.
I love it. Well, as much as I love talking about non-Christmas with you, that's not actually the purpose of our chat today. People who've been listening to the podcast for a long time will have heard you on before. I think, you know, a lot of people in Ireland are aware of your work. You've done such good stuff around body and around your Irishness and identity. And now you have a new podcast series out called Self Help, which I was very amused to hear in terms of a title, because it's not something that I would necessarily have associated with you in terms of an industry. So tell us a little bit about Self Help, where it came from and what drove you to do it.
I mean, it is me kind of looking at self-help and wellness with a very critical eye. So I think you're not the only person that was like, hang on, are you a psychologist now? Is that the vibe that you're giving off? Actually, far from it. It's armchair psychology from the experience of the patient. I have been someone that has spoken quite openly about my experience with madness and having had a very long relationship with psychosis and imagining things that just weren't in reality but felt very real to me. And having spent 5 years in therapy, looking at myself, being very inward, I collected a lot of thoughts about self-care and self-pity and the act of therapy and who gets to decide your diagnosis and what that looks like and the environment and the cost of my medication on the world. And so I just wanted to place all of these questions and this thinking somewhere whilst doing something that doctors are always trying to get me not to do, which is to listen to the voices in my head. So it's me wandering around rural Scotland in some of the worst weather that Argyll and Bute had ever experienced, and just thinking aloud on five different subjects, all relating to the brain and how we might question and think about this very common idea of mental health.
Yeah, I have to say, I listened to the first episode because you can really hear torrential rain in the first episode, and you refer to being absolutely drenched a couple of times. I did feel for you. I was like, but I also found it kind of, there were a few things just in terms of your physicality and your surroundings. And before we get into more of the content, I found it kind of, it made me want to go for a walk in the rain. The sound of the rain is just beautiful and soothing, especially when you're not in it. But I kind of felt like, do you know, maybe if I had the right rain gear, I would go out in the rain and have a big walk. Maybe that would be nice. And I could kind of envisage your surroundings. And I found that soothing. And I was actually thinking, if you were someone who didn't get to go outside much for whatever reason, it would probably be a lovely listen.
I mean, I've had some really brilliant responses, but one that so touched me and has really stuck with me is somebody who experiences agoraphobia and they hadn't left the house for a few months. And they were like, within the first few minutes, I grabbed my coat and my keys and I left the house. And I was just like, it's so touching to think that, like, and I kept on saying to them, like, this is not me that's done that. You know, this is just giving you the little kick up the bum to get out the house. But I'm really glad, like lots of people are telling me, like, I just felt like walking. So I left the house and I put a coat on. And I'd say to you, Louise McSherry, like, what is the right rain gear? Like, just a coat. And just, I think sometimes in our head, we can like build walking and movement up to having to be difficult and scary and the worst and painful. And actually what I found on those walks is I found myself, I walked 80 kilometers. I broke it up. I stopped for a cup of tea when I wanted. I brought sandwiches with me. I made it feel the way that I wanted that movement to feel.
I love it. And I, as you were talking there, I was thinking, yeah, the right rain gear. I'm always saying to my children, we're waterproof. Like every time they complain about going outside, I'm like, don't worry about it. It's, we're waterproof. Like, no worries. So that's a good thing to keep in mind. So another thing that I loved hearing in the recording is that while you're walking, you're recording, so you're talking, and sometimes you're out of breath. And I just found that to be so, like, I don't know, inspiring is the wrong word, but like, I think if you're in a bigger body, you know, you feel a bit embarrassed about that stuff. The reality is anybody who's walking at any pace and talking is going to be out of breath sometimes. But I think when you're in a bigger body, you carry around this shame of like any sign of physical exertion or that like you're struggling at all with any kind of physical activity. And I was like, wow, it's just great to hear someone talking and be a bit out of breath. Because if I was on a walk with a friend, I would be embarrassed by that, even though it's crazy.
It's taken me a long time to get to that place. And I purposely wanted to put in all of the huffing and the puffing and the bits where I'm just like humming to myself and falling over, because it's far truer experience, I think. And particularly, I really hear that when you're in a fat body, there's this pressure to somehow like not be a fat body, like to be like the most agile person. And, you know, from a physiological point of view, it just takes a bit more effort for my body to get some oxygen around it. My body cools itself, so I am going to sweat. You know, I've just come in from a run. I'm sweating now. I'm bright red. But look, no one's got hurt. And I think we need to be honest. And I think Instagram particularly has, particularly in like fitness Instagram, has created this sort of content where people show you like doing the most, and like there's not a bead of sweat on them and their hair is perfect and the maquillage is still looking gorgy. When actually that's not the reality for anybody.
No.
Regardless of who they are. But yeah, there can be this sense of fat shame. And I think something that I'm trying to do within the movement that I encourage people to do is like, get a sweat towel, sweat, pant as much as you like, wear the clothes that make you feel comfortable, not the ones that you think this is what movement clothing looks like.
Yeah, yeah. And I know, just a little tangent, you are doing a lot of work in the yoga space at the moment, which I love to see. I got super into yoga during COVID, and then I did what I do with everything, which is like, I got too into it. And then I decided that I had to do it every day for 45 minutes. And if I didn't do that, then there was no point. And so therefore, I completely fell off. But it's been really beautiful watching you kind of really develop your yoga practice. Tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing around that.
So I have a very brilliant way into yoga where I only ever have practiced at home and with fat people. And one of those teachers is a very brilliant teacher called Lucy B, who encouraged me to come to her classes. And so I did. We made a little podcast for Spotify about fat yoga. And she said, look, I think like you're doing really well. I think you should go up to my next level in my classes. And just kept on encouraging me and having a fat teacher encourage you. And lo and behold, one day she said, I think you like this a lot. I think you should do your teacher training. And so I did. And I graduated at the end of last year with my 200 hours. And then I immediately did another 30 hours training because like you, Louise, I have to be all or nothing. Yeah. But what it has given me is just... it's given me a sense of like, I know from practicing for 5 years now that I have a knowledge about how to practice yoga in a fat body that other people are really encouraged by. And so things have gone a bit silly on the internet for me because of it, but I'm really enjoying it. And I'm enjoying someone said to me recently, because I was very paranoid that I was like, oh, does this like muddy the water a bit? Does this mean that people might think I'm not an artist or I don't make work? Or someone said, no, this is just an extension of your practice. You're just holding more space for more people in a different way. Yeah. And I thought, I'm really holding on to that idea that just like everything I try to do is about giving some recognition to people that might feel ostracized or like outsiders to find themselves and to offer themselves a bit of solace and calm, perhaps.
Mm. Well, with that in mind, let's talk more about the content of the podcast, because you are examining, you know, things like sanity in the first episode, self-care in the second episode, these concepts that have become a bit almost tired on the internet. You know, they're kind of buzzwords, but they do have so much meaning. I mean, maybe not sanity, but, but they do have so much meaning. And you can kind of forget that, can't you, in today's kind of dialogue?
Yes, I think the words mental health have become so ubiquitous. It's become like a thing where people are like, oh, have you got mental health? Yes, I have mental health. And so it's become so abstract, when really what I wanted to do is kind of really knuckle into some of these concepts and being like, okay, well, who decided what sanity was? Yeah. And why have we all decided like this is what sanity looks like? If so many of us find that another expectation to live by. And so, yeah, as much as I think these conversations or these campaigns that are run nationally and globally, which is like, just say hello to your work colleague and they'll be okay. I think they're well-intentioned, but when we really look at the structures at play here and what harm is being done to us externally through the world that we live in, I just wanted us to kind of come back to some of these conversations, some of these questions with some renewed ideas about, well, is our approach to mental health working? And what do we mean when we say mental health? And what do I mean when I say that I'm mad?
Yeah. And when you say that you're mad, because I love that you use that word, just like, which I'm sure some people find a bit alienating, just like those of us who call ourselves fat always have to explain that, you know, it's okay. This is our choice to use this word about our bodies. But when you say you're mad, what do you mean?
So I mean that politically, and I mean that clinically. So from a clinical point of view, I am a person that chooses to take antipsychotics. I have had medical intervention to try and hold parts of myself together and to try and get me to happier, more sustainable ways of living. But I'm also a politically mad person, and that means that I believe that I shouldn't be hidden away. People like me shouldn't be restrained and taken their choices about how their care and what their care looks like. And I believe in the visibility of mad people as well. In the same way that we talk about fatness and fat liberation, I think we can easily transpose that to mad liberation in the same way that we have looked at reclamations of words like queer. Again, it's all in the same realm for me of being like trying to take on something which was once used against me as a non-deniable, as something that I want to accept. Yes, this is who I am. This is the way that my brain works. And I require and I ask for support in lots of different ways. And I do lots of things to support my madness so I can function. But that doesn't mean I'm ashamed of the moments of which I can't look after myself, the moments of which I am in bed. Because I think that shame only pollutes the madness and can keep us unhappier. And we know that inherent shame can lead to really terrible things.
Yeah. It's interesting that idea of there not being a finish line, I think, is always an interesting concept to bring into conversations like this, that it's not with mental health. Sometimes, sure, maybe you get well and that's it. But often that's not the case. And there will always be times when you'll be well and when you won't be so well. And I always say that with fat stuff as well, that like, you know, you're probably not just going to reach the finish line and be like, oh my God, I feel great about my body. I'm fixed and it's just going to stay like that forever. It's not, because the world is there and it's feeding you negativity and you have to take it in and process. And sometimes you're going to be better at that than other times. And I feel like, you know, watching friends of mine experience struggles with their mental health and experience mental illness, it doesn't seem like it goes that way most of the time. And I feel like you're right. Accepting that is probably a very progressive thing.
For sure. I think there's a massive thing that I had to accept, come to terms with, which is I will never be well. This is always going to be something that I will experience. I've experienced it since I was 14. There's no way that this is somehow just going to magically like evaporate from my body. The other part of that is the parts of my mental health which have been bruised by trauma, those experiences don't leave us. And so coming to terms with and surrendering to the fact that this is who I am and this is what life might look like for me can be super nourishing and actually get you far closer to this imaginary finishing line than anything else. Admitting this idea that yeah, this is perhaps something that will always be with me. And there is part of me which does envy those people that were like, oh, I've only ever experienced one mental health blip and I've never had anything since. And I'm like, really? What? Why? How? But I'm glad for them, because actually you wouldn't ask for this experience or experiences like this on your worst enemy. Do you know what I mean? Mm. It's so bizarre when your own body is against you. There's an organ in your brain. There's an organ in your body that is it feels like it's working against you sometimes. And trying to make peace with that it is part of you is being very, sorry, not being very articulate here. Trying to make peace with that has been a beautiful part of the road of, I think, what some people in wellness called healing.
I really admire your approach to life, because you seem to have an endless well of desire to figure things out and, you know, to get to the bottom of things, which I suppose is why you make the work that you make. But when you are experiencing some of the challenges we've been referring to, like, I can imagine that sometimes you probably just really don't feel like it. So what makes you keep going when it comes to making this kind of exploratory work?
Well, yeah, I mean, 2022 was a pretty bad year for me, where I thought my hands were falling off and that I was in a TV show. Mm-hmm. And my friend said to me, where are the cameras? And I'm like, classic question. They're everywhere, actually. So I do take that, you know, I had to stop and I had to refigure out who I was. And in those moments, I'm still asking questions. And my therapist said to me, see, the problem with you is you want to know the answer to everything. And perhaps there isn't an answer. But I'm still defiant that there might be an answer. I like to contextualize everything or understand things. I don't need them to be final or to have a finish line. But I do want to understand how we arrived at a certain place. And so, yeah, there are moments of which I'm like, oh, I give up. I can't be bothered. But I've always had an inquisitive mind, I think. My mum was always said I was very imaginative, which I think is shorthand for lots of different things. But I think I do love the yoga and I love going out for a run. And these other things that I put around my life offer me moments of getting out of my head and offer me joy. And I'm big into the gardening as well.
Oh, Scotty.
I know. I love the gardening.
It's a long way from Shoreditch.
I do. I love the gardening. I love like thinking like, well, I could grow that and I could grow that because it's all maths. Mm. And there is actual, and I talk about this in the podcast, there is actual scientific research that looks at this bacteria that lives within soil that makes us happier. It emulates serotonin. So I'm just doing all the things that like give, and I'm trying to give permission to other people to do the things that might offer them 5 minutes of softness. I'm not saying joy or happiness because I think that's a high expectation, but 5 minutes with yourself rather than constantly being a provider for other people and a vessel for capitalism. I think the more we can do that and offer ourselves joy and calmness and just stuff, I think that the perhaps easier life might be.
Oh, I think that's a beautiful way to finish up. Scotty, where can people find the podcast?
Just by searching Scotty Self-Help on the internet or, you know, just by Googling it. They shouldn't be lazy, Louise McSherry, okay? Do you know? We can't give them everything in life.
We like to make things as easy as possible so that you get the listeners. Do you know what I mean? And where else can they find you on the internet?
Oh, I love the Instagram. You and I love the Instagram.
We do.
So just in all the normal places where people like us like to talk about ourselves.
Fabulous. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
A as I said at the start, I got loads of messages from you guys asking me to talk about the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City on this podcast this week, and we are going to do that. So first, in the pop culture segment this week, you're going to hear us talk about some of the normal stories of things. Andrew Lloyd Webber has a poltergeist. Who did Cher tell to fuck off? You know, really bringing you the vital information. And then we get stuck right into the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. So I really hope you enjoy this recap of what's been going on in the world of celebrity with Esther Amore Donahue. Esther Amore Donahue, thank you for once again welcoming me into your home. How are you?
I'm great. Happy New Year, Louise.
Happy New Year. How are you feeling about it?
I feel sort of neutral. The gear is in neutral. I think, yeah, look, we're full of optimism. We go, yeah, this year is going to be the year. It's all going to happen.
You know what? It's going to be a year.
It will be a year. There'll be 12 months to the year. And we are week one into the 12 months of that year. So yeah, what
no
can
matter
we say?
What, it will
we
be
are here.
A year. Exactly. Yeah. We're still here.
It will be a calendar year.
Yes. That I can say for certain.
Yeah.
Well, we've got lots of fun stuff to talk about this week, fortunately, and including the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, which I know lots of people got onto me and said, please talk about it on the podcast. So we are going to do that. We'll do that at the end. So don't worry, if you're not a Real Housewives girly, then you don't have to stress. You can just skip it. But we're going to start with Gypsy Rose Blanchard.
Yes. Well, she's a new surname now. It's She's gone double barrel, which I actually don't have to hand. Let me see.
That's okay. Oh,
sorry, it's Gypsy Rose Blanchard Anderson.
Oh.
Call me by my name, Gypsy Rose Blanchard Anderson. Yes.
I like it. Now, for people who don't know, it kind of feels a bit weird to be talking about her in the like celeb entertainment section in one way. But the way that a lot of people know about her is through TV programs and movies that have been made about her, or TV series that have been made about her.
Yeah.
So for people who don't know, who is Gypsy Rose?
Well, she's in the news cycle because she was released early on the 28th of December, the end of last month, after serving 8 years in prison for the role in the murder of her mother, Dee Dee Blanchard.
Yes.
So it's not great. And she was convicted alongside her then boyfriend, Nicholas Godjohn, who's serving a life sentence still. So he's not coming out. And she was originally sentenced to 10 years, but got early release. So her mother had raised Gypsy Rose. Gypsy Rose's mother had raised her to believe that she was suffering from a variety of medical conditions, including leukemia and epilepsy. And I don't know if this is the how you phrase it, but her mother had Munchausen syndrome by proxy.
Yeah.
Which is a psychological disorder marked by attention-seeking behavior by a caregiver through those who are in their care.
Yeah, so I think Munchausen syndrome is where you like kind of pretend to have illnesses that you don't have. And Munchausen syndrome by proxy is when you pretend that someone else does.
Yeah, and
but like this was extreme.
Yeah, I mean, Gypsy Rose was in a wheelchair and Gypsy Rose knew she could walk, but such was the level of psychological maneuverings at play that she was stuck in this dynamic and it came to a fatal end. And, you know, it was just a part of their, you know, every relationship has patterns or whatever, and it was built into hers, and she'd been experiencing this since she was a child. So her mother had deceived her and doctors, and it was a whole big network of lies. Yeah. It goes on. It's like everyone's kind of pulled into this.
Yeah,
and
it was crazy. Like, I've watched a lot of documentaries and films about this because I just, the psychological side of it I find fascinating. But, you know, the mother completely isolated her Gypsy from her father as well, who's back in her life now, and had Gypsy also convinced that Gypsy had these very serious medical conditions, convinced loads of doctors, except for there's one doctor who kind of raised a red flag, but it was somewhat ignored, that she had all of these medical conditions, like things like she had tubes in, she had a feeding tube, she had loads of medical procedures that she didn't need to have. So lots of people are like, why are, like, the doctor should be punished for this as well. So she, you know, her mother abused her. I mean, this is abuse.
And there's a power imbalance there, obviously. You know, it's an adult-child relationship, so that, you know, if you're raised in this, you don't know any better, and you're, you know, and she fooled, you know, so many people. And, you know, then when people might ask questions, she claimed that her daughter's medical records were destroyed in Hurricane Katrina. So the lies just get bigger and deeper and more elaborate.
And she also took a lot of money that was raised for them.
You know, she was, you know, she wasn't, you know, I think Gypsy Rose went on these kind of make-a-wish experiences. And she, if there were perks, to put it crudely, she took advantage of them. And she was not shy about seeking donations to help with her care and this kind of thing. I think, you know, it was obviously it's a psychological condition, and it was awful that Gypsy Rose went through this. But I think if you look at, like, certain, even in your own life, little relationships, you know, you've got that one person, you're like, what? I know what you're saying is not
true.
100% true. Yeah. Or the year this, I was there and that narrative is not correct. But sometimes you're just like, there's so many people passing through, you go, well, I'm not going to see that person for another, you know, yeah, till next. And we'll so this is like to the extreme, obviously. Yeah. I am not a psychologist.
So but anyway, in the end, Gypsy Rose and her boyfriend murdered Dee Dee.
Yeah. They murdered Dee Dee. So she, as I said, she's been released now. So that's why she's in this news cycle. But she has come out with a media plan, management. You know, she's got a book that's available on pre-order. And so she, it's sort of like, she has been kind of memeified now. It's sort of, it's a bit, yes, queen. She's like, you know, she's out. And I think it's, we forget the details that someone was murdered, even though, I mean, that's a brutal way to go. And Gypsy Rose suffered, had a horrific childhood. Or
And look, it's extremely complicated. Like, no one's denying that it's kind of clear cut in this kind of situation when the context is that this girl was abused. Mm. But like, it is kind of a bit weird, isn't it?
It is strange. Like, I don't know, have you seen that film, The Killers of the Flower Moon?
No.
Well, spoiler, so please move away. It's not really a spoiler, but at the end of the whole film plays out and you see everything that went on and you're like, whoa, and you're 3 hours of your life. Actually, you never see this film because you're like a tight 90.
No,
you
can't do a 3 hour film.
But
no.
I went to see the film. So at the end, they have like this old timey kind of live radio show, the way they used to do back in the day with live musicians and live performers. And they're covering it in the same way that we would cover a murder podcast now. It was kind of an interesting little commentary there.
Yeah.
And so obviously those people were just like, in a town hall, putting on a show, people were like laughing and ooh and aahing and stuff. And you kind of, you forget that those lines become smudged and erased.
Yeah.
And you're looking, like when we listen to murder podcasts or whatever, like that are true crime, you know, sometimes we kind of forget there's that
real person.
Yeah, there's a real person family at the end of that. Yeah. And but what's happening is that the world gets faster now. The timelines are getting more crunched. Mm. So that's not even 10 years since that happened. Yeah. And yet now she is this social media star and she has currency and she has power and she didn't have it before, so maybe she's entitled to make some financial
Well, she's gonna make loads. Yeah. She's got 6.3 million followers on Instagram now. She has a series that's premiering on Lifetime TV in the US tomorrow or today as you're listening, if you're listening on Friday. It's on January 5th, 6th and 7th. It's called The Prison Confessions of Gypsy Rose Blanchard. She has a new husband. She has a new life. You know, she's going to make a lot of money. But her main kind of thing on her Instagram is Munchausen Syndrome by Proxy Advocate. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think she does want to do some work in that area, which is a positive thing.
Yeah. And I think if someone is, you know, consuming this either passively or just kind of if they see it in the news cycle or you see it somewhere, they might go, well, maybe it might raise flags in their own life or for someone they know. And so that's only a good thing.
Yeah. Okay. Now this next one, I just thought we need to talk about the fact that some celebrities are giving us so much access to their lives. This headline is Cardi B says she and Offset haven't reconciled despite having sex on New Year's Eve. Colon, we're not together. Like, why do we know that they had sex on New Year's Eve? Why do I know that?
Because that's just the way the world works.
That's so crazy. Like,
some people choose the Beyoncé defense. Beyoncé shut it down. We don't know what she is doing.
Know
and
nothing.
It's great. I mean, it's you kind of, and that is like an act. I mean, I just think, wow, you've done a good job, Beyoncé, in terms of how I perceive the world.
Yes.
But Cardi B did not come up that way. She came up reality TV. She shares everything. She live streams. And she's like, you know, maybe she just was getting annoyed by the rumors that, you know, people had spotted them at the same location, nightclub in Miami. And she was like, no, she could have just said, we're not together. We just happen to be in the same venue. But she was like, we're not together. Yeah, we did have sex on New Year's Eve, but we are not together.
I'm going to read the exact words that she said.
Actually, when I saw this, I was like, and I don't add extra production onto you, if you could put a bit of classical music behind this, because it's quite beautiful, because it's the last line. Is that what you're looking at? The last line in particular?
Yes, it's my favorite.
Yeah.
I want to be clear to you guys, because you guys are making your assumptions, and I just wanted you to hear it from the horse's mouth. Was I clubbing with my baby father yesterday? Yes. Did I got dick down yesterday? Absolutely, baby.
Put it on a t-shirt, please.
Did I got dick down yesterday?
Absolutely, baby.
Oh, Cardi.
You know,
the thing is, part of me is like, come on, keep it to yourself. And then another part of me is like, give me more.
No, that's art.
It's who she is.
It's who she is. She wrote like WAP. Yeah. So that's just part of her poetry. It's part of her language. And, you know, but I mean, this is, like you're either going the Cardi B way or, as I said, you're going the Beyonce way.
Yeah.
But it's just part of culture now. They give us little tidbits. But I think, say, if you look at, say, Jada Pinkett Smith, she gave us chapter and verse, but she is still retreating to the environment of her palatial double home with Will Smith. They're still making money. It's calculated. You don't get to the top of the heap, you know. And obviously there's some reward in what they get. Like Prince Harry.
Yeah.
Did we need to know that he put Elizabeth Arden 8-hour cream on his todger? Why did that
and
make
that
the
smell
edit?
Of it reminded him of his mother.
Of his late mother. That was something that could have stayed in the drafts folder. I mean, really, that is extraordinary.
But I'm glad it didn't.
I
suppose Cardi B, the whole reason that she came to fame in the first place is because she was unedited.
She was not reading from the press release. She was just saying these wild things. She's entertaining. She's funny. She's a comedian.
Oh, she's goth.
And she knows a lot about Eleanor Roosevelt. She's crazy about history.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Even on Hot Ones, she gets in a bit of Eleanor Roosevelt.
Oh, I love it.
She's into history. So, yeah, so that's just what, you know, we're versed in getting readies with me. We're seeing their house in Architectural Digest, even though they're obviously curated.
We know they got Dick Dan.
They got, absolutely, baby. Absolutely.
Next to another woman who is delightfully unfiltered when she wants to be, Cher. I love this. Who did she tell to go fuck themselves?
She said to, Cher, we love Cher. She's going a long time. She's seen them come.
Oh my God.
And she has seen them go.
She is so gorgeous.
She's incredible, yeah.
Who is her doctor? Because it is...
It's just done well.
It's so good. Yeah. Like, you look at other famous women who've had work done, and it doesn't look so good. And I still believe in everyone's right to make their own decision about their faces, their bodies, whatever. Do what you want. But Cher's work is spectacular.
She's going out into wherever she goes. She's going out into the courtyard in full natural daylight. And she's like looking at the... She's not just going, oh, yeah, you look great. She's like, no, if I pull... Will this look demented? And they're like, yes. She's like, okay, well, then let it lie.
Yeah, they're looking at it from all angles. Sorry, just to stay on her face for one moment. I think she may also be drinking the blood of virgins.
Possibly.
And potentially dipping herself in formaldehyde every night as she goes to sleep.
She's doing something.
She looks unbelievable.
And what, she got like a 35-year-old boyfriend or something?
Yes, I love this.
We love Cher. And she gave, what's her iconic line? My mom says, when are you going to settle down and get a rich man? And she's like, Mom, I am a rich man.
I love it. I have it on
a
t-shirt.
That is the best. That is the best line. That was a terrible impression. I'm very sorry about that.
I liked it.
And thank you. And Days, women's supporting women, Louise. Days Magazine's Sean Fay once wrote, if Madonna and Lady Gaga and Kylie and Cyndi Lauper were playing football, Cher would be the stadium they played on and the sun that shone down on them.
Yes.
So let's get into the story.
Yes.
We're pro Cher. So... if you've heard of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, it seems like kind of an outdated, weirdy thing. I guess it's just a device to sell more records and to kind of things, you know.
I mainly know about it because they inducted?
Yeah.
Is that a word?
Yeah.
They induced. Dolly Parton. And Dolly Parton initially said, no, I don't want it because I don't do rock and roll. It wouldn't be fair. And then there was kind of a lot of uproar. And then eventually she was like, okay, fine, but I'm going to record a rock and roll album. And that's why her latest album is a rock and roll album. So that's why I know about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, because that is my specialist area of expertise, Dolly Parton. So Cher slammed the organization.
Yeah, she was on the Kelly Clarkson show promoting her new Christmas album, and she, you know, Clarkson was gassing her up, telling her you've scored so many number one hits across your career.
Seven decades.
I'm just seeing this.
It's incredible.
And she noted that only the Rolling Stones had matched that achievement. And she's like, it took four of them to be one of me, she said, and I'm not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And she said, you know what? I wouldn't be in it now if they gave me $1 million. They can just go, you know what, themselves. You know, if you can't, you know, credit me after a 7-decade career, that seems wrong. But
She's right.
She's iconic. And I read an article by Courtney Love talking about how, when was it? It was last year, how female artists are still incredibly underrepresented in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Mm. Just 65 female stars to date have been inducted since the inaugural ceremony in 1986, which is around 8% of the total of the remaining 700 plus inductees female artists.
It's crazy.
The math ain't mathin'. It doesn't,
Yeah.
So, she's right, Cher. You don't need it.
Yeah, you're dead right.
You've got an Emmy, you've got a Grammy, you've got an Oscar.
Yeah.
And you wrote Believe.
Exactly. And you look incredible.
You look incredible.
Which I know is not the main thing, but like you do. And you've always had great outfits. I love her. Yeah. Special shout out to my friend John, who is obsessed with Cher. I hope you have been satisfied with this segment, because I've been nervous the entire time about what you will think of it.
You're welcome, John.
Okay. Now, I know we're not really talking about Christmas anymore, but I simply had to talk about this story because it is so bad.
Yeah, do your kids watch this?
No, because I fortunately... saw this, I saw other parents being like, don't let your kids watch this. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, my kids aren't really that into movies, which is it says a lot about their attention spans. But anyway.
Well, look, Santa's real and all that kind of stuff, and this is not for, you won't be watching Christmas movies till the end of this year, because we're in a new year. But there have been calls, if you are a Disney Plus subscriber, to remove the new Diary of a Wimpy Kid Cabin Fever film after some say that it ruins the magic of Christmas. So in the film, I mean, I think a lot of your listeners will be familiar with these characters. Obviously, the lead character is Greg Heffley.
Of course.
Of course. He's warned by his mum that he must be on his best behaviour in the lead up to Christmas. At around, this is where you, if you are, happen to slip through, at the 22-minute mark, Greg goes upstairs to get wrapping paper at the request of his mother. But when he opens the cupboard, he sees the games console that he's asked Santa for hidden at the back. But then on Christmas Day, Santa also delivers the games console, and so he donates the present to a child. Now, just, I think in that instance, the mother just thought she'd get ahead, but Santa, as well as watching, knows. Yeah. So it's rated 6+, but it's been slammed by some parents saying that kids have been like asking questions. And when that scene comes up, they're like, but how, why did she? And da 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 da. So if you want to, you know, happy life, just maybe just delete that one or don't.
Like, I know parents who said they saw it and were like, it absolutely, like, it's too much. Mm. Like, it does. It definitely raises questions that don't need to be raised.
Yeah.
And like, 6+ is young. Like, uh-huh. 6 is young for those kind of questions to be asked.
Yeah.
So yeah.
That should be prime magic time.
Yeah, but like, you'd think they would have thought of it. I don't know. I think it's wild that they didn't consider it.
It seems like they didn't screen it for any little young children or whatever. Apparently, or any parents.
Not. Apparently no. Not. Now, we have to talk about Andrew Lloyd Webber's Poltergeist.
I mean, what a choice. Andrew Lloyd Webber, he's like, what the? How
he's
is this
such a strange man?
And he's still going, and he's richer than Croesus.
Yeah.
In an interview with The Telegraph, Andrew Lloyd Webber wrote the musical Cats. Have you seen Cats, the film?
I have not seen the film. Ooh. I've seen the musical, but I know I chose not to see the
film.
Odd.
Yeah. So he was in this interview and they were discussing whether any of his theatres were haunted. He said he'd never seen a ghost but had witnessed some unusual activity at his home. Again, I'll do an Andrew Lloyd Webber impression. I did have a house in Eaton Square which had a poltergeist. I mean, it wasn't just a ghost, it was a poltergeist. It would do things like take theatre scripts and put them in a neat pile in some obscure room. Imagine having a house so big that you had obscure rooms.
I know, my dream.
Where is it? It's in the obscure room. I mean, but the ghost was tidying up.
Yeah.
So I think this sounds like a great...
Why are you complaining?
And in it, putting it away, tidying it up to an obscure room. Perfect. Can't see it. I decided out of mind. In the end, we had to get a priest to come bless it and it left.
Oh.
And now his house is a messy in bits.
What nest. A weird poltergeist. Strange.
Are you ghosty? Are you into ghosts?
No.
Believe?
I don't not believe. Yeah. Like, I'm always interested.
Do you
to
believe
hear the
in
stories.
Life after love?
I mean, yes, definitely.
Yeah.
But I don't know about ghosts. I don't not believe in them. But like, if I really start to think about it, I'm like, I mean, it feels unlikely. But like, I also enjoy ghost stories. Yeah. So
I'm not really into ghost or horror stories, but I am into signs. Like, I would like a sign. Like, oh, I really like this. You know, jumper. Oh, a robin's just landed on a bin, top of a bin. Better buy it. Mm-hmm. Those kind of things. I'm open to that.
Well, I remember one time I was watching a TV program. No, where did I get this concept from? I can't remember. I was watching something and or listening to something. Something in the world.
Be more vague, please.
brought me the idea that if you asked for signs from someone you loved who died, like a specific sign.
Yeah.
If you made it really specific, you would get it.
Yeah.
And then you would know undeniably that it was like from someone.
Yeah.
And I remember saying this actually at the book club that I used to attend, that you guys have now made your own new WhatsApp
group. You've got to break away. There's no point. Nobody wants to be in it.
But I do want to be in it. I just could never go.
Okay.
It's fine.
Well, 2024 is here.
You've rejected me. It's fine. I accept it.
We're just being pragmatic.
So the book club that we used to be in, I remember saying this and one of the girls asked for a sign from a friend of hers and got it like very specifically. And I had asked for a sign as an experiment from my granny. I asked to hear Cara Mio Ben, which is like an opera song that I sang for my Leaving Cert.
I know what it is, Louise. No, I don't.
I sang it for my Leaving Cert. It was one of my granny's favorite songs.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, granny, let's do this. You know, give it to me. And that week I was watching TV and it was, you know, that show, it's not a show that we watch, The Choir or whatever, with that English guy who does choirs around the country. It's not a show that we would watch. I don't know why it was on. It happened to be on the TV. I hadn't watched the whole thing or anything. And all of a sudden, they start singing Caramia Ben. Excuse I have not me. Heard that song since then. Like, it's, you know what I mean? I'm
open to the magic of it.
I don't know. Yeah. I think sometimes you need it.
No, it doesn't matter. It's just a coincidence, but it was the right coincidence you needed at the time. Yeah. And so, just give yourself that bit of comfort because life's hard.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly, Esther. Take your stuff where you can get it.
Yeah.
Now, it's time. It's time to talk The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. That is an impression of the theme music, by the way, if you're unfamiliar. So for people who are unfamiliar with The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, there's been four seasons of it. It takes place in Salt Lake City in Utah, home of the Mormons. There's a lot of kind of Mormon flavor around the place, but they're not all Mormons. And
are there good Mormons and the bad Mormons?
Yes. And in fact, one of them has written a book called Bad Mormon. But the most famous thing about this franchise up till this point has been that Jen Shah, one of the original cast members, is in prison currently after being investigated by the FBI for fraud. Mm-hmm. Fraud, I think, and I can't remember the specific charges.
What do they call it? The Teresa Giudice are the same thing. It's basically
kind of stealing people's information and selling it.
So we've had an incarceration. We've had making butter from scratch scenes. This show is giving us everything. I was listening to before you, as you knocked on the door earlier, I was listening to Watcher Craplins, and they were talking about commending the sound design in this episode.
Oh,
the
sound in this episode is spectacular.
It's just so good, but if you're not into the Housewives, and we don't have to convince anybody. If you're not into it. But these are little parcels of art. And as it gets deeper into the years, the people working on them bring their skill set to the fore. Because where would you else be, like the sound design, the shots that you they would like
The editing. Oh my God. Spectacular.
It's just brilliant. So
anyway, we're gonna talk about what happens. Yeah. So if you are going to watch it and you don't wanna know, just skip.
Yeah,
skip.
And come back.
Yeah. Or don't come back. It's okay if you don't come back. I actually do have a load of recommendations though. So I would come back for the last 5 minutes of the episode. But anyway, here's what happened.
Okay. Excuse me.
Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. So they're all in the Bahamas. Okay. Mm-hmm. One of the cast members has family ties to the Bahamas. So they're going on their cast trip. And this is what I don't know if it was the podcast I listened to earlier, but they were like, they've been on domestic trips for the past few years because of COVID and because of Jen, a former cast member.
Yeah, so Jen wasn't allowed to leave the country.
We're finally getting to go away.
Yeah.
They're in the Bahamas. They're having the greatest time. It was a bit of a drippy drab. You know, there was some things going on. Meredith was getting shouted at. Lisa was shouting at Meredith.
I mean, there has to be drama.
Whitney was shouting at Heather at one point, "You exploited my vagina in your book."
Walking through a car park, screaming at her.
You know when someone, you're like, just take the, read the key. Heather's running away from you in her caftan. She does not want to talk to you, Whitney. And also, Whitney, as they say in Watch What Happens, you're a bit of a ding dong in this episode. You gave consent, you read the passage. Yeah. Anyway, so if you're not versed in this world, I'm sorry, this is a lot of information coming at you. But basically, they're in the Bahamas going on the trip. They're doing buying $700 perfumes and all this kind of stuff. And now everything's gone. Mm. They're going on scooters and they're kind of lying on boats and they're flying around. Standard housewife stuff, great. And then we get a flashback. And then we're like to the present day. So we know something's going to happen.
4 hours earlier.
4 hours. There's a meeting on the beach. Heather pulls them down to the meeting on the beach. We have all the sisterhood is there. The sisterhood of the traveling caftans.
The original cast members.
And Heather's kind of laying it on the little butter knife, little wooden, Swedish wooden butter knife, you know. We're sisters. We've been through this.
But I also love that the other women come down and they are giving their greatest performances because they've been told they're going to be told something, but they don't know what they're going to be told. So they come down and they're like, "Heather, what is it? I'm scared. What's happening? Come on. What's going on?"
They're wearing bright poppy colors. Mother Nature's involved. The wind is whipping, whipping hair in the faces.
The sky is drama, gray and dramatic.
They're huddled together. Maybe the sound people have said the wind is really affecting the microphone. You can just stand very close together because Heather's on one side, the three little witches of Eastwick on the other side. And they're like, "What is happening? And what is going on?" And they're kind of like, they're vibrating because they want the news, but they can't. And what's happening? And they're on the verge of crying, but they've nothing to cry about yet. And anyway, and then So then Heather is like, just, did she reveal the whole thing there? Or she, do we just get switched to it?
She goes, Monica is not who we think we are. She is not our friend. She has been scheming and planning and plotting to become our friend and take advantage of our friendship for years. Monica is reality Von T's. And then the women go, what? What? Oh, you're kidding me. Big dramatic. And then it's like
screaming, crying, crying, shaking.
Yeah. And so you're like, who the fuck is reality? Yeah, exactly.
Well, so if you're new, like, that's not even, it's like someone said, if it was Dumas, I'd be like, she's Dumas.
Yeah.
But it's reality Montes.
No. Well, at this point, like, I actually got up from the sitting room and went into where Gordon was working and demanded that he take a coffee break. Gordon has never watched a minute of The Real Housewives. I was like, I cannot watch this alone. You will enjoy this. Made him come into the sitting room and watch the next 20 minutes with me. Because what they did was so good. They went to Heather. Heather's sitting in her like testimonial and she's telling the story like Jessica Fletcher herself. That's a Murder, She Wrote reference. Like going, well, there's always been something that hasn't rung true with me with Monica. At first, we really bonded, single mothers. We had a lot to talk about. But the way that she just like, frequently and casually brought up people's private information always rang red flags for me. Rang a red bell, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Phrase in the lexicon. It's ringing red bells, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, on the beach earlier that day when Monica, Heather was having, they're having like, come to Jesus, you know, let's all be friends. So basically Meredith's been accused of like planting these stories about, what's her name, been in the Greek mafia or whatever.
What's her name?
She's so Greek. Yeah. Did she mention that she's Greek? I can't remember her name. But anyway, so they're on the beach. Like, she's like, so Heather puts a question to
Angie.
Heather puts a question to Monica and is like, about Meredith. And the way Monica answered, and I was like, red bells alert.
Red bells.
I was like, that's like, it's like, she did not say it to me, not. You know, yeah. I was like, you were sitting on a fan. You did not, that was a, and she was smiling. I was like, is Heather, I was like, Heather's chosen to let her get away with that. Because that wasn't I was like, ding-a-ling-a-ling. Yeah. Little tiny bell ringing.
So Heather starts going back and she's like, and then this kind of bothered me and then that bothered me. And then it all came to a head when just before this trip, I wanted to get her a voucher for Body Works Beauty, blah, blah, Beauty Lab and whatever, her business, which is like an aesthetics clinic. And she says, I wanted to get her a voucher. So I looked her name up on the system and there were three different Monicas with three different last names and the same date of birth. And one of the Monicas had not been paying her bills and owed us a lot, Beauty Lab owed us a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So then she started to ask around. Turns out Monica's dodgy. So she realizes that Monica's dodgy. And then she calls like someone who works in the internet to do some digging for her.
She works for...
Yeah, they didn't say.
Name was beeped out. Yeah.
So annoying. Like, but I presume it's like
a... It must be the Meta or something. Or Instagram.
Exactly.
Someone behind the scenes who can just trace like the who is this person. Who is this 3D person? Yeah. Who's an administrator on this account or whatever. She
And so she gets the phone call that afternoon in the Bahamas. And like, you know, you hear the audio of her answering the call and going, oh my God, I can't believe it's her.
I feel
physically sick. And the producers are like, get in there. Just go in to the cameraman. The cameraman goes in and she's like, get out. And she pushes them out.
Yeah.
And you don't know what's going on. But it turns out...
And she did that. Did she do that the season where she had the black eye? She kind of did the same thing. So, but we'll get to that as well. So then they're seated on, again, it's windswept and vacant. There was a hurricane whipping up. The hair is still right.
Like, the weather was a paid actor. Like,
the weather was
wild.
A fifth character, like in Sex and City, whatever they say.
So she's
character.
Like, reality Von T's.
Yeah. But so they have the table set up, first of all, just on the bit of grass outside the fancy hotel overlooking the water.
For their dinner.
And it's in the shape of a triangle, for the Bermuda Triangle. Because I said the Bahamas. I meant Bermuda.
Oh, yeah.
I was Bermuda in the Bahamas. Anyway, look, doesn't matter. This is not a geography show. This is about Surreal Heights of Salt Lake City.
Yeah, Bermuda. So, sorry. Every time we said Bahamas, replace it with Bermuda.
You're like, I knew that was wrong. A red bell was ringing for you.
Red bells.
Red bells
all over
the place. Red bells. Not all countries beginning with B or begin the same, or, you know. But
To the Caribbean.
Sorry. So they're sitting at the thingy, the triangular tables, and they're all just like little cats. Their tails are wafting in the breeze. They're just waiting for Heather to... Are you enjoying that carpaccio? Interesting. Like the arancini balls? Yes. And then Heather's like up to her full height and she starts going into it then. And you're looking at Monica and it's like, you know, when you've told a lie when you're small and you know the jig is up
and
that you spilt that something all over, the red paint all over the sofa. And you're just like, I'm going to wait for her to finish the sentence. That's going to buy me time. You can tell by Monica's face.
Yeah, she's panicking.
She's like,
because what has happened is Reality Vantees, it turns out, is this like internet trolling account. Yeah. Like I was talking to James Cavan about this yesterday and he was like, it's kind of like in the vein of Bloggers Unveiled.
Yeah.
And it is that kind of thing. So it's like, you know, posting videos and rumors and gossip about these women. And it started out with Jen Shah, who is the woman who's in prison right now because they wanted to, you know, uncover Jen Shah or whatever. But then it expanded into just posting rumors and often lies about the other women.
Yeah.
So as far as the other women were concerned, this is an Instagram account that has been harassing them and their families for years. Mm-hmm. And they have just been told that this woman whose birthday they celebrated the previous day, who they've been hugging, hanging out with,
that they've flown to the Bermuda / the Bahamas with.
Red Bells. Is this person?
And the thing is like, and the thing about it is, so first of all, the reality, if you go looking for it, there's only a Reality Vantees 2 account left. So maybe the first one was deactivated. So this, you'll only, it has like 38,000 followers, but obviously the original one must have had a lot more. So it's basically like, the way it is, Monica is basically like a fan who was contributing to this account and through a process of determination and will befriended certain people in the cast, Jen Shah, applied to become a housewife, and is now like the poacher in with the kitty cats.
Yeah.
So she's like feeding, she's getting all this information. She's first hand. She's somehow like in the soup now.
Yeah.
And she was just like an innocent, like a bystander.
Well, it's wild because the way that it all worked, so she was Jen Shah's assistant for a while, but they basically were like, you only became Jen Shah's assistant because you were a fan. You were doing drive-bys, like they showed texts and stuff of her doing drive-bys of their house to have a look. Like I would, to be honest. Like I would.
When I went to like Como, I was looking for George Clooney's villa. I was like, which one does he live in? Yeah.
So then she became Jen Shah's assistant. So she got all these secret recordings of Jen Shah, which she then used on the Reality Vantees account. But she eventually says, it's not entirely true, but it is partially true. Because she says that actually there were other people running the account and she only contributed the Jen Shah stuff. Mm-hmm. And one of the main people behind the account and the whole reason that Heather found out in the first place was that it was Heather's hairdresser.
Heather's hairdresser has been tending to her tresses this whole time. She's been...
Yeah. So because Heather's hairdresser was very good friends with Monica, Heather called the hairdresser and was like, here, what's the story? She says, your one had... Tamika, I think is her name, or Tamisha. Had a crisis of confidence or a crisis of conscience and was like, I'm confessed everything. Was like, look, this is what's been happening. So Monica's defense is, actually, I wasn't posting about any of you. I never posted about any of you. I only shared stuff about Jen.
There was a number of other humans.
Yes, involved.
That were contributing. Yeah, yeah.
But like, my God, it is so dramatic.
It's so dramatic. And it's Rebecca Vardy, it's Tom Sandoval, which I wasn't fully into because I wasn't in that universe, but I'm in this universe, so I'm like aghast. And Monica, it's interesting because it obviously is very dramatic and stuff, but Monica's a new cast member, so it doesn't have like, it wasn't seasons and seasons of loyalty of Monica. You're like, oh, I can't believe Monica did it. Like Monica has been kicking up some shit since she landed. Hasn't been my favorite. Like,
I've really liked her. Not like liked her, like I want to be friends with her, but liked her as a housewife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, she's doing the job. Anyway, she's in the same. But then they show, so we've revealed this and they're like, oh, the gasp of it all. She has like, there's footage of her in Meredith's store wearing a wig, a fake wig and a mask, obviously with pandemic times. And it's just, and then they cut this footage from this season going to Meredith going,
I've never been
in your store. And she's like, yes, you have. And you were there wasn't being accused of theft. She was there when an item was stolen by one of an entourage member.
So it's just all the pieces of the puzzle are coming together. And then eventually Heather's like, get out, pack your bags. And she has to leave. Like, I mean, she couldn't stay.
They just weren't going to engage with
her. No, but also, okay, so here's what I want. Mm-hmm. I want desperately, and we obviously have the reunions coming.
Three-parter.
We had stunning footage of Monica's testimony. Monica saying, even Gossip Girl couldn't stay Gossip Girl forever. Like, mm-hmm. What? She is really delivering.
Yeah.
But I want full interview with the producers. I want to know, when did they find out?
Uh-huh.
I want to know how involved they were in deciding that Heather was going to meet the women on the beach and then reveal it at dinner. Like, how did they prepare them? Because there's brilliant bits in this where, like, at one stage, I think it's Lisa stands up and she's like giving out yards. And in the background, you can see the producers scurrying
with
around.
The sliding door. They're like in their flip flops. Oh,
and
my
then
God.
They're like trying to get out of the camera. Yeah. But you can just imagine the panic. I want a 5-part limited series about the production behind this.
Yeah.
Like, it is the best revelation of anything that has ever happened on The Housewives.
It's art. You need to get involved. It's
cinema verite. Like
it, and when they did like a few, you know, a little montage from the reunion. And I thought, like, see, we live in this age where, and you know, shame, there's no place for shame. But people are shameless. Yeah. She's like, obviously got a strategy. She's like, I am going to do this. And she even had her like burn book from Mean Girls in the reunion.
Reunion. Oh, you know. Well, she obviously decided to lean in. But
she's
like,
going to lean in.
But the thing is, when I was watching her panic, I was like, you know, she has kids. Like, she has a teenage daughter who's going to hear about this. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? There will be real life repercussions for her.
And they wouldn't bring her back for the next season because the other women won't film with her.
I want her to come back.
Yeah, but she's got no allies.
They'll have to bring in someone else.
Unless Mary decides to, like, because Mary's been, I don't know what the point of Mary is.
No.
So Mary's not really in the season, but like, she's the only person she could kind of might take her under her wing or something.
Yeah.
That she could have scenes with, but she's not going to have scenes with anyone else.
Like, I think if there was a way to keep her, I would like her to stay, to be honest, for entertainment value. I understand. Don't get me wrong. What she did is, you know, it's bad. Like, you know, I can say from personal experience that the people talking shit about you online may seem small and meaningless when you're not at the kind of receiving end of it, but it really impacts your life.
Because and then they're like, well, you've been writing stuff about us or being associated with this account, and we're on your birthday.
Yes.
I am wearing a stunning yellow toga and we have this whole thing for you. We flew down here, blah, 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 blah. Of course, they're getting paid loads of money. But it's like,
when Heather's giving her like her, sorry, I keep interrupting you. I'm so sorry. It's my enthusiasm for the topic. Yeah. But when Heather's giving her big speech, she's like, what you don't know about us is that we are ride or die and we
she's leaning into that. She's like,
I interrupted you and didn't let you get, I'm sure, to the part where she does this whole thing about how she was like ride or die for Jen and she made sacrifices for Jen and she did this for Jen and that for Jen. She concealed the fact that Jen gave her a black eye. And then everyone's like, because that was the big end of last season.
Yeah. That was the worst. Kept thinking, who else could have hit you? Either whacked your head. It was so obvious. Yeah.
But she wouldn't admit it.
She wouldn't admit it. And you're just like, oh, just say it. Like, see, but the thing is, and then when they cut back to the footage, you see how guilty Jen is. Like,
I was on Twitter last night and on TikTok, someone posted all of the scenes around the black eye of
like
Heather.
A mega cush.
Yes.
Like,
and I was watching it like, you look, when you watch it and you
Jen's
just
got a
look
yo-yo
at Jen,
like,
literally, Jen's like, we don't know what happened.
Right.
We don't know. Like, it's just so obvious that it was her.
They really, like, they did. And even Meredith had that scene, remember, with Jen when she got convicted and stuff. And but you see, I don't know what Jen was like. She was always in her testimonials like, I am so victimized and I'm the worst, you know, this is so bad for me. And you think maybe they were frightened of her.
Yeah.
Like, so, you know, again, like an unhealthy dynamic. And you think, well, let's just get her off to prison and we can just do these last few scenes. I can understand that. Sometimes you are like, and she obviously is a mastermind because she organizes the whole thing.
Manipulator,
And she was constantly crying to coach and I'm the poor me. And you're like, you're ripping people off and you're still actively pursuing the victim narrative. Yeah. But good for you, you know what I mean? So I don't know. So that was, but the black eye revelation. Oh my God.
It was just so thrilling. Like, even Gordon was like, that was good.
Yeah.
I accept that was good.
Yeah.
Like, people have been saying to me, could I watch it on its own? And I'm like, you really could.
You could.
You really could.
It's not as, the flavor is not as intense and deep because you don't know these women. You haven't seen them churn butter.
No. And I was like,
Pilgrim
Girls. Even if you could just watch the most recent series, because then you'd get to know
Monica.
Yeah,
she's only new. She's only new.
But like, it was so good. Yeah. It was so good. I want to listen to 100 podcasts about it. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about it endlessly for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. It was such a thrill. And once again, I just am so grateful to be a Housewives fan and vindicated for the hundreds of hours of my life.
Yeah.
I've and spent watching it.
Hundreds of euro on the subscription that I will never give up. And I'm glad you got some paid work from Heyu because you deserve it. And you can also, it's pretty canceled each other out. Whatever fee you get, it's pretty canceled out because you were paid, and I will never give it up.
I do pay for Heyu, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Even though I've done a tiny bit of work with them.
Like I said, we were like little miners drilling for oil at the beginning, just looking for things that would work.
Exactly. Exactly. Grateful for it.
Grateful for Sharna. And grateful. What I've just said that. What is grateful for Sharna?
From Who Weekly. It's
Who Weekly. Yeah, yeah.
Megan Fox.
Sharn, it's Megan Fox's Brian Austin Green.
Grateful for her.
Grateful for Shauna. So in conclusion, that is, has that made any sense to anybody? We hope so.
I have just loved it. It's been like a fever dream and I wouldn't change
it
for anything.
So we'll have to choose. Maybe three we should reunions. Choose one episode. What will be the best one? We have to know when she's going to reveal all her stuff.
It's kind of hard to know, yeah. But we'll definitely talk about it again. And we might do a little special record, just the two of us maybe, for those who are interested. Okay, Esther and Mordonahue, thank you so much. Where can people find you?
Esther Two Names on Instagram and Reality Montese, number three, just kidding. And there's we have a winter selection box. If you listen to the Carvery Roast, Emer Esther Sunday Roast podcast about Carveries and Roasts, we did a little winter selection box and you can still subscribe on Apple Podcast if you want, or Patreon.
I love it.
But just subscribe for 1 month because after that it's gone. Like, it's just a little box set.
Okay.
So there you go.
Fab. Thank you so much. And now it is nearly time for me to say farewell, but would you believe I have some recommendations? Yes, that's right. I actually managed to consume some culture over the break. I actually consumed, like, I think a lot of culture, and I consumed a lot of good stuff. So first, I watched How to Have Sex. If you didn't hear about this film, it is a kind of indie film. It's available on Mubi. If you're familiar with Mubi, Mubi.com, you can sign up to it. It's like a streaming service for independent films. This is an award-winning film. It won prizes at Cannes. It is from the British filmmaker Molly Manning Walker, who is just absolutely brilliant. And it is so, like, excruciatingly accurate in terms of its depiction of female friendship and early sexual experiences for lots and lots and lots of women. The performance by Mia McKenna-Bruce, who's the star of the film, is incredible. I was kind of squirming watching it at times because it was so accurate in the joys of being a young woman, like, exploring the world for the first time, and also some of the traumas of being a young woman exploring the world for the first time. It's basically about three girls who go on holidays as teenagers and what happens. And I really loved it. If you're interested in that kind of thing, I would say it definitely, content warning for sexual assault. And if you find reconnecting to your own teenage experiences difficult, it might not be for you. But if you like that kind of thing, or you get something out of that kind of thing, How to Have Sex, it's on Mubi, M-U-B-I, highly recommend. I watched Saltburn, as I know many people did, hopefully not with your family, over the course of the Christmas. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It's streaming on Amazon Prime if you haven't seen it yet. It is, I think it's brilliant. It's Emerald Fennell's film, starring Barry Keoghan and Jacob Elordi, and it is set in the world of very posh English people, and that is what I loved about it. I mean, first of all, it's beautiful, like, it looks stunning, but I just loved these, I mean, I want to say caricatures, but who knows, I've never been around very, very posh British people, so maybe it's not a caricature, maybe it's actually completely accurate, but I loved being in the world of these super, super rich and incredibly rude and cutting Brits. Richard E. Grant is brilliant in it. Rosamund Pike and Kerry Mulligan are just outstanding. Rosamund Pike plays this lady, whoever, I can't even think of her name in the film. She's super posh. Everything she says sounds like she's being lovely, but it's actually deeply cutting. Kerry Mulligan plays this kind of somewhat tragic, posh woman who is struggling with her life. And just, again, everything that comes out of her mouth is so funny. I loved it. Every critique I've read of it, I kind of have felt like you're looking for too much from this film. You're asking it to be something that it's not. In terms of entertainment, it's wild. As you've probably heard, there are some people would say dark, graphic scenes, some things that, you know, some people would deem unsavory. None of that really bothered me, to be honest. I just thought it was brilliant. I also watched Priscilla. That's a film about Priscilla Presley. I give that about a 6.5 out of 10 in terms of plot and stuff. I felt like it was a bit slow and I didn't love it, but I thought the performances were brilliant, and I thought that this costumes and the makeup are just spectacular. And for me, often that's enough to get me to really enjoy something. You're in the world of the 60s and 70s, and it's just gorgeous. Like, oh, I mean, Sofia Coppola's films are always beautiful, and so I love them for that reason. This one could have done with a bit of work, I think, on the script, but in terms of visually, it is gorgeous, and I want to go and copy Priscilla Presley's eyeliner for the rest of my life. I also watched, in terms of TV, Colin from Accounts, which is a short comedy, would we call it a sitcom? It is on the RTE player. It's actually an Australian TV show, and it is highly entertaining and very easily digestible. I feel like I might have, if I recommended this before Christmas, I apologize if I'm repeating myself, but I didn't want to not say it to you. It is so much fun. It's about two kind of relatively single people who are brought together by a car accident and an injured dog, and, you know, romance ensues. It is genuinely funny. It is so, like, as I say, easy to watch because the episodes aren't long. There's not that many of them. And they are all there on the RTE player for you. And finally, I finally watched the Squid Game Netflix program, not the drama, the Squid Game real game, Squid Game the Challenge. Excuse me, is what it's called, where real people do games from the original drama series. And I have to say, I really enjoyed it. Like, I didn't expect to enjoy it. We started watching it because the lads were kind of enjoying it. And then as we kept going, we found the lads were less into it and we were more into it. So we kept watching. I found it very entertaining, I have to say. If you like those kind of challengey shows, it's a bit cringy. There's a lot of American kind of bravado in there, but I would say it's, you know, it's good fun. If you like a reality show, if you like a challenge show, that is there on Netflix. And those are my recommendations. Haven't done a lot of reading. Looking forward to getting back into that now when the kids are back in school next week. Anywho, if you have made it this far, frankly, you deserve a medal. I hope you are doing well. I hope you're feeling okay. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. And I thank you so, so much for spending time with me this year, 2024. We've got lots to look forward to. And if you're feeling a bit rough, that's okay. You know, as I always say, not every week, not every month, not every year can be good. But you have to keep going, because if there's one thing I know in this life, it's that these things will pass. Thank you so much to Acast for having me on the network. Thank you to all of my wonderful contributors. As I say, if you're not feeling good, that's okay. Let's just put one foot in front of the other, and we will be back again next week.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Flimsy stands slowing you down? Well, it's time to upgrade. Armadillo builds durable, North American-made tablet stands and kiosks. We're so confident, we offer a lifetime warranty. So, elevate your business and visit armadillo.com. That's ARMODILO.com and use code ACAST for 5% off. Armadillo. Built to last. Designed to impress.